Hi, this is E. Christopher Gleick from GeekForce5.com, and you're listening to Generation Goat episode number 2. And I'd like to take a moment right now to introduce my partner in crime, Mr. Jonathan Martin.
Hello. John Martin from SongsToSaveYourLife.com, and I'm here to suck the life out of the podcast, so woo!
Mission accomplished. No, I'm just
kidding.
Thank
you very much.
I'm already in a silly mood because I screwed up the intro. How hard is it? How easy is it? How hard? How easy? How does one screw up an intro to a podcast?
By overthinking it, hiring too much post-production. I can think of a lot of ways.
Okay. Well, now I don't feel so bad.
Yeah. No, you're fine. It could have been much worse.
Oh, good. Good.
I actually said the name of my site wrong. So there we are.
What did you say?
I said songs that save your life, and mine are all inactive past tense songs. They've all done it.
That's right. You should now run out and buy songsthatsaveyourlife.com.
I know. It would be much more practical. I run a website for people who have 20/20 hindsight, really is what it comes down to. None of my songs on a subway where you're being mugged or, you know, when you need a defibrillator or, yeah, no, nothing. My song's not going to help you. once you're dead, they'll do their damnedest to bring you back, but nothing. So it's that kind of week. So, it's going to be that kind of podcast. So if you just downloaded this, I don't know.
Thank you for using your bandwidth on us.
Yeah, go out and get yourself a copy. We'll try to let you know when it's over by playing some sort of loud noise.
Right.
Maybe you just downloaded this to keep your dog company while you're at work. In which case, we salute you, canine listeners.
Yes. Bark if you... God, the jokes just aren't coming.
But what I will say, in seriousness, to the dogs that are listening, there's no reason you can't rise up and take the Alpo for yourselves. And two,
we
have a Twitter page now.
We do.
So one day when this complete farce is live, you can get in touch with us. But in the meantime, you can leave us coded messages, and we will use this podcast to help you coordinate the rebellion. And
that's,
I guess,
right,
you know, human listeners could leave suggestions and comments and... We would ask that you limit it to one shut up per day.
Yes, one shut up per day, and you can send that shut up to at Generation Goat on Twitter.
So there you
are. You know, the problem is I forget that we've done a bunch of stuff in this week between the last podcast and this podcast, and I forget that we have that to talk about.
It's true. What have you been doing this week?
Well, I have been doing a bunch of interviews. I started off last week thinking, I don't know what I was thinking, but I had the idea that the website GeekForce 5 was going to be about independent artists and independent thinkers, and I only really got around to interviewing a few people. But I think the interviews came out well.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed David Spaltro, who is an independent filmmaker out of the East Village. I don't know, he's out of one of those villages in New York City. And reviewed his film Around, which I compared to Clerks, which the Kevin Smith film, on a number of levels. There's a comparison to be made there. Spaltro and Smith are both from New Jersey. They're both films about... slackers trying to rise up and do something with their lives. And the difference I pointed out without giving the whole thing away, because I want you to go to my website, is that Spaltro slacker actually tries really hard to do things with his life, unlike Dante Hicks, who just sits around and bitches.
You know, I was reading that interview, and I noticed that, he took 40 credit cards to get the project done.
Yeah, that's true.
Kevin Smith famously took out huge credit card bills to make Clerks. Mm-hmm. And You know, when I think about this little podcast, and it's still, you know, kind of small and just trying to get going, I wonder if what we need to do to make this more successful and more entertaining is to do something completely reckless with our finances. And I'm not sure what that is. Either gold-plated candy bars for every listener, or, you know, maybe we need to film this in high def somewhere, maybe like Beijing or something.
That is an interesting thought.
So we can keep that in the back of back burner for a while.
Yeah.
As if grad school wasn't a reckless enough financial decision.
Yes, grad school is pretty reckless, I suppose. And I have already done the grad school thing, but you are doing even more grad school than I did.
It's horrible. Don't do it, kids. If you're listening to this podcast, chances are you're not motivated enough anyway.
But on the other hand, they were motivated enough to click a link somewhere to download it. So there's that motivation.
That's true. It's true.
I suppose.
Speaking of which, of downloading, the podcast is now on iTunes. You can search for Generation Goat, and you could be the first and only to review us one day.
You could. Yes, please leave us.
Chris and I from making up personalities to review us.
I've never done that. I've never done that on any of my websites or anything. I've never done that.
Don't know if that's exactly true. I seem to remember certain characters commenting on older web pages.
No, that never happened. There was never a guy named Jose.
I will just say that. Transcript. That'll be fine.
I've been known to do that in the past. It was, you know, a deep, dark day in my web-based life, but, you know, I wanted people to comment. I mean, how hard it is to get people to comment on things? It's ridiculous, and I think it's hard to get me to comment on things, even things I want to comment on, so, like, I can appreciate that people don't want to do it, but how do you get them to do it? You get them to do it by insulting yourself as a character named Jose. Apparently, that's what you do.
I think what we've learned really from this whole website making experience is that antagonism is the only way to go. You know, there is no way that love gets you comments, as much as it would be nice.
Yeah. And I think it all goes back to that Kevin Smith quote from Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, where Ben Affleck's character is explaining to Jay and Bob what the internet is all about, and he says it's about watching pornography and bitching about movies. And the key word there is bitching. That's what the internet is about, right?
It's pretty much, yeah. I suppose I could do more complaining with my website, but I feel like I'm antagonizing my audience enough by making this podcast. And actually, you know, I mean, since last week, I mean, traffic has gone up again, so...
But it's awesome.
It clearly worked, right? So, as long as we keep talking about nothing, like a horrible, horrible Chekhov-inspired Seinfeld episode, we'll be fine. Actually,
Chekhov-inspired? Go ahead, sorry.
Well, I should say that stuff actually did sort of happen on the webpage this week before we completely lose focus, because... I really want to get to talking about monkeys, but before I get there, there's a segue. So some stuff did actually happen. I actually made a post, an actual, honest-to-God, legitimate post, a la the original purpose of the website this week, on Don McLean's American Pie, which, you know, is about as hard rocking as the site gets, so check that out. And we had a little 365 songs kerfuffle. Basically, in a nutshell, kids, what happened is our benevolent overlords at Fave Tape died for a couple days, and the site was reporting down due to server crashing issues. Inconvenient, but all right. But one of our intrepid readers pointed me to a news article mentioned that Favetape and a couple of other MP3 hosting sites, indexing sites, were being sued by EMI. So it seemed a little bit suspicious that they just happened to be down at the same time. So long story short, too late. We moved. Sorry, I was distracted by someone in the studio. We attempted to move things over to Last.fm. We created a little group on Last.fm, which, you know, this is taking way too long, but Last.fm, it's great because it's basically immune to prosecution. There's tons of music to add to your playlist, but, you know, unless you have X number of certain types of songs on your playlist, you can't play the whole thing. So that's a real downer. But in the meantime, Fave Tape has returned without comment, without mention of a lawsuit, without notice. And so there's been a bit of indecision. It's been a very Hamlet-like couple of days. So what should we do? I don't know. It sounds like we should stick with Fave Tape until we're all sued into the poorhouse.
Well, I think one of the things that I neglected to do is sort of back up my Fave Tape list. And so I fell behind because I didn't have any record of what was anywhere else other than Fave Tape. So I think as annoying as it might be, it's probably a good idea to keep a backup of the list either on your own computer or on a different website. Something like Last that isn't gonna go down. I've seen some people actually posting blogs about it or being pretty good about posting tweets about it, which helps. I have been less good about doing that, and so I really need to work on keeping a backup of it somewhere. And now I've fallen behind again, even since Fave Tape came back online, because I'm a bad monkey.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's any excuse to spam my fellow man. Which is really, I think, what Twitter is for. I mean, there are certain people on my Twitter friends list, I guess, that I'm following that, oh my god. I mean, just, there's an artist from Michigan that I really like. Her name is Natasha Westcott. I've even once ponied up $700 for one of her paintings. I think they're great. She tweets about every 6 seconds, every day. And my homepage is quickly turning into just her page. So, yeah, I don't know what you do, because Twitter doesn't allow you to selectively...
Well, here's the thing about Twitter is... oh, and she knows... That's interesting. She knows some of these... I just checked out her page. I was not following her.
I mentioned a girl, and Chris went straight to Google. That's awesome.
There's nothing... I am a Twitter addict. It had nothing to do with it being a girl.
Carry on.
One of the things that I think is useful are the sort of desktop Adobe Air powered apps for Twitter.
I've been using Twirl myself.
Yeah. TweetDeck is one that's definitely worth checking out, just because that allows you to group people by... it allows you to put people into groups, and... You could conceivably create and it's a multi-column layout. And so you could conceivably have one group that was all the high-volume people, and then you could have another group that was the people who don't tweet so much, and you could separate them out in a little bit. TweetDeck, the only downside is that it does become a memory hog after a while. I think they've fixed that a little bit, but so that's generally what I use.
I'll check it out. I mean, I'm relatively new to the Twitter. The young people have been using it for ages. And what's disappointing to me is that, you know, the week or two that I decide to start getting into Twitter is also the week or two that the Republican Party starts using Twitter. And
they followed you.
Yeah, well, maybe, you know, but does that mean that I'm officially old? I mean, is that really a sign that when you're sitting around and thinking, oh, I've got a really great idea, this will be fun, and then, you know, 70-year-old white men from South Carolina start doing it.
Yeah.
Does that mean that maybe you lost a little bit?
It might mean that you're a little old. It might.
Yeah.
But, I, you know, everybody has their thing that they come to. I think in technology, you know, like I came late to Facebook, probably because I wasn't a student at the time that it was coming up. And you know you're coming a little late to Twitter. I was a little early to Twitter, well, relatively, So yeah, I think yeah, we're getting old. I think there's no denying that.
Facebook, we have crashed. For me, in the past week, has completely erupted, because now it's one of those weeks where one person you kind of knew from school notices you're there, and so then 10 people from school that you kind of knew notice that you're there. And while there are a couple of people that I've been legitimately happy to see, I've noticed that I've quickly given up or surrendered the idea that Facebook is about my friends and people that I know, and now it's just kind of like, oh, you added me as a friend, and you don't have spam for me. Okay, sure. I don't want to hurt your feelings. And I'm not sure how that happened. I'm not sure how I suddenly became worried about hurting people's feelings more than it was having something nice.
Yeah, Facebook, I don't know. I want it to be more useful. I want it to be more something or other. But the spam and the amount of applications, you know, when I first looked at it, I was like, wow, this is cool. This is, because I liked the idea of MySpace. Sure. But I came to Facebook and I was like, oh, thank Christ that there are not like customizable layouts and all of this garbage that you can put on your page. And then sort of the Facebook applications exploded, and everyone wants me to, you know, one that really gets me is this college friends one, which I keep getting added to. And I'm like, man, the whole point of Facebook...
I apparently have no college friends. What is that?
I don't know. I just usually just click it because I don't want people to feel bad. But, like, isn't the whole point of Facebook to reconnect with college friends? Why do we need a whole separate app for...
Yeah, it seems a little weird to me.
I don't know.
I realized a long time ago that you can just ignore people's app requests and they don't know.
Yeah.
So
I've wondered about that.
I just ignore app requests, and not all of them, but, you know, sorry, kids. If, you know, you want me to add Flair to my website.
Oh, but the Flair one is not... I think the Flair one is funny.
I don't know. I like Office Space. I love Office Space, but yeah.
Yeah, I can understand. I do love the Flair one, but all these ones that were like there was like a vampire game, and then there was a werewolf game, and then there
zombies.
Like, what? I don't need these things. I signed up for the superhero one back when there was like a get your own superhero ability,
right.
And I think I logged in 3 or 4 times. But
yeah, somebody keeps sending me what's the latest annoying one? Fantasy Siege Engine requests.
I have to log in now just to see if there's anything crazy waiting for me.
I can't handle it, but oh well.
Yeah.
Nothing
crazy.
While you're looking it up, monkeys.
Monkeys. Hey, we're the
with an EY.
With an EY.
This is completely unrelated to our web pages, but where this would go, I don't know. So this week, as The Daily Show, which is really the only news I ever watch anymore. informed us that Congress was attempting to pass a law banning interstate transport of monkeys. And it made me realize that there were a number of great, I say this word without any actual sense of what it means, great movies from the 70s and early 80s in my childhood that would never have been made. One of the Cannonball Run movies has a chimpanzee.
That's right.
I believe the same chimp shows up in Smokey and the Bandit at one point. There's a movie where the truck driver from Smokey and the Bandit rides around in a pickup truck with a monkey. I have a vague recollection of this film. But if you think about the sheer volume of monkeys either operating or riding around in some sort of transport, or flying planes, or, which, you know, this would kill an industry.
It would.
And I think that really, at a time when there's economic crisis in our country, we shouldn't be looking for ways to stifle innovation. And
no.
You know, so I urge our listener to go out and fight this terrible bill. We don't know how you're going to do it. You're probably going to need to make some friends.
Yes, and make them listen to the podcast.
But do it. Do it for America, and do it for monkeys.
Monk, I, that, That's really, I hadn't thought about how many movies came out in the 70s or 80s that were monkey, that featured monkeys, but, what's Michael Jackson gonna do?
Yeah.
Oh, that was right. Cheap. That was,
Bubbles is dead, isn't it?
I think you're right. I think Bubbles did die.
So.
That's so sad.
That is sad. I don't even know where does he live anymore? I mean, he doesn't live on the ranch, so.
No, he doesn't. You know what that makes me think, though? Did it all go downhill when Bubbles died? Is that when it all went downhill? Because how long ago did Bubbles die?
I think many important biographers of Michael Jackson would say that he was, Bubbles, that is, was really kind of the moral center of that relationship. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty sad. I don't know. You know, strangely enough, wow. Wikipedia again, and with a figure this controversial, you kind of have to say probably not true. I was just kind of looking for information about Bubbles, and I came across the following. Jackson bought and this is from the Michael Jackson article in Wikipedia. Bought and befriended a pet chimpanzee called Bubbles. There's a link. An act which extended his eccentric persona. In 2003, the singer claimed that Bubbles shared his toilet and cleaned his bedroom. Later, it was reported that Jackson bought the bones of the Elephant Man. Okay, let's just move on to the Bubbles article.
Yes, that's what I brought up here.
Bubbles is a professional chimpanzee. Okay. Who lived with pop star Michael Jackson for many years. Bubbles lived at a cancer research clinic in Texas until 1985, when he relocated to California in the company of Michael Jackson. For the following decade, he often accompanied Jackson to award ceremonies, wearing matching outfits, and was seen widely by the public. Rumored to have his own bodyguard, Bubbles sat in during several recording sessions for Jackson's album, Bad. I'm just gonna skip ahead a little bit. It's unclear the fate of Bubbles from this article, so I think we're gonna be disappointed. But for those of you that, want to check it out, I will say that Corey Feldman, Dragon Ball Z, and The Simpsons make their way into this article. So, that's worth reading. Project X has just come to mind as well. Another great chimpanzee movie of the 80s that would not exist without being free of this terrible law. This one featuring Matthew Broderick, who is working at a facility where they are training chimpanzees to fly fighter bombers so as to go forth and nuke the Russians. And there's a chimp named Goliath that he makes off with.
Huh.
Would not have been possible if this terrible draconian
law were in effect. Here we go.
Sorry, folks. You're just here watching us read now.
Bubbles the monkey dies in L.A. Zoo, February 19th, 2008.
Resting Bubbles, man.
The beloved monkey Bubbles, once owned by Michael Jackson, has been found dead in his cage, zoo officials said on Monday night. It is believed to be suicide, but the coroner hasn't ruled.
Oh, come on. You're making that up.
This person might be making during the autopsy it was discovered that Michael Jackson's banana was lodged in his I was fooled.
Monkey. What would drive a chimp to suicide, and furthermore, how would they commit suicide,
Michael Jackson's banana. Wow. That's just, I didn't see that part. I was just so obsessed with finding out what happened to Bubbles. See, this is how internet forwards start, right? We're so obsessed with something being true or being, we forward it around to all of our family, and then we have the one smart person who looks up Snopes and tells us we're an idiot.
Lady and gentlemen, you just saw Chris Punk himself. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing.
I enjoy punking myself.
Wow. Well, all right, let's try to go sort of back on topic. Because, at the half-hour mark, when we know that everybody except our most obsessive stalkers has left, we should try to reward them. And this was one other thing I was thinking, and actually this whole movie thing kind of reminded me. It seems that the natural crossover point of our two sites are, mm-hmm. are music-oriented movies.
That's true. That's.
And I was laying in bed this morning trying to think of great music movies that I've really enjoyed, and I was having a really hard time getting to three.
Huh.
There's Almost Famous, which is fantastic.
Right.
People are going to kill me for saying it, but I still like Empire Records a whole lot.
I love Empire Records. See, I'm not going to kill you.
You understand.
And, I do. And how do you then, not like, just as a tangent, how do you not like that performance with, I think it's Renee Zellweger, right? Gets up on the roof and like rocks out to, what the hell is the name of that song?
Sugar High by Coyote Shivers, except cleaned up quite a bit for the movie.
Right. Sorry to distract you.
Well, in the extended version of that, Rex Manning actually goes up on the roof and performs with them as well before getting arrested. Mm. So you should totally check that out. But then what? All right, Spinal Tap, sure, but it's not like, I wouldn't say that of my generation, you know, it's one of my core films. I did enjoy Detroit Rock City, which loosely is based on going to a Kiss concert.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, what are you left with? You're left with Adam Sandler and Airheads.
There's something charming about certain moments of that, but not the whole thing.
Yeah, but...
What about High Fidelity? It's been a long time since I...
There we are, yeah, High Fidelity.
I remember sort of watching that under duress or something. How do you watch it? I remember it being sort of on in the background and not getting totally into it, but Jack Black singing at the end. Again, it's always about the person you don't expect to sing at the end that seems to get me.
It's true. It is a well-established trope. But are there any ones that center on actual bands that would make anyone's list? I mean...
That Thing You Do?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, there's Almost Famous, but...
Yeah, that's true. I remember hearing a rumor or reading somewhere that the guy who sang the vocals on... For the Wonders from That Thing You Do is actually the same guy who sang the vocals for the band from Almost Famous, but I think I've since discovered that's not true.
I always imagined that it was one of the guys from Fountains of Wayne.
Mm.
There you go, kids. Go do your homework. Come back and tell us what happened.
Tell us what happened. That's a good one. I actually like... You know, I have my whole binder of DVDs right here, and I am just going to, I'm going to grab it, and I'm going to flip through.
We wrote a movie about a band. And
8 Mile. 8 Mile is kind of about, I mean, it's about a rapper, and it's not about a band, but.
I mean, we wrote a movie about a band, and I hate it. I don't know about you, I think it's terrible.
Well, it's been a long time since I've read it, so I don't know that I could... say one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there being certain parts that I definitely liked. Of course, the part that helped inspire the title of this podcast. There's a great scene in that movie that we wrote where we're making fun of the fact that our old high school band could never decide on a name. And there are a couple of bits right there where those scenes are genuinely funny, I think. And they would be funny if shot right. And if we could do a whole movie that was just us making fun of the name, maybe we would have been all right.
It's true. I still think we should revisit it one day, because it's too, well, cutting not to go back to. Oh, our terrible little band. And I'm sure, listener, that you've probably known a terrible high school band at one point. And I can tell you, we ran the gambit on every bad band cliche, I think.
I think so. What specific ones do you think of? Oh, Ray. Ray was not about a band, but about... And I don't know that it was great. Anyway, what particular cliches do you think, or band tropes, or whatever you want to...
Well, everyone had their own kind of style. But
this is true.
As the band became more known, I noticed that it sort of accelerated to the point where we really looked like, I don't know, a boy band that had washed up on a desert island. It was not good. It was not pretty. Well, a boy and girl band, because we had a female bass player.
We did have Beth the bassist.
We all liked Beth very much, so I'm sure that had nothing to do with it, but it was the 90s, and I think every 90s band of consequence was required to have a female bass player at one point.
This is true. This is true. And, you know, here, we did fill a lot of those cliches, but going back to the movie, music movie thing, I think if we were actually making the movie, the one of the great moments would be when Beth got plugged into a real amp, like a real I was about to say man-sized amp, which just
for the listener at home, our bass player played most of the time with a practice amp, and as such, because she was both shy and because the amp was small, we never actually heard bass parts in our songs, which, you know, that counts for something. That might be a small mark against us.
it might.
But then at our final high school show, a larger amp arrived, and we could all suddenly hear Beth, and it was very good. And yes, this would be a touching moment in our otherwise potty-mouthed adventure.
And that's always I think that's the struggle, because we have these great, tender, aw shucks moments, and then we have this desire to sort of poke fun at it because it's really funny, and how do you reconcile those two things? How do you not end up as Airheads, but end up somewhere closer to Almost Famous, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I think the thing that we're missing, the small ingredient, would be talent.
There is that.
I think really is where... But, I mean, there were so many things in our little movie that I would love to see, you know, like, realized. For instance, the local coffee shop where everyone plays is called Java the Hut. I mean, come on. You know?
There is a whole little world that we develop, I think. And I think the world feels whole and convincing to me. And, so I agree there would be great things to put in there. Did the shoe shop have a name? Because there's a scene where the bass player is in the shoe store, but I don't remember. I don't think, maybe it didn't. I just remember there being a good scene there.
It is full of these little moments from our life, and it would be nice one day to somehow get that in front of people. So, you know, if you're a bored and probably not very well-respected filmmaker and you're listening to this podcast, let us know.
I should bring it up in my... I'm going to go to New Hampshire Media Makers next weekend. It's a monthly meeting of media makers in New Market, New Hampshire, and I will see if there are any bored filmmakers there.
Yes, you know, it would be nice to tell the story of Trio of Emus, which is our little band, and its nemesis band, The Third Rail.
The Third Rail. That right there is reason enough to make the movie, because I want to see what The Third Rail looks like, you know? Just think of, you know, you're going to have to hire a couple of... high school bands to sort of do these things, because I think we're a tad too old to play ourselves. And you know, think of the band. I think there's going to be a band out there that's excited to play The Third Rail in our movie. I'm going to put money on that. I think somebody would love to be The Third Rail.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, it's not that hard. I mean, we know what The Third Rail look like. I mean, we've all encountered The Third Rail. They're, you know, the guys that somehow at your middle school went from hanging around in shop all day to suddenly playing a band.
Yes.
You know, the kind of people that hold their hair in place with wood glue. There was actually a boy in our high school who did this. I wish I could remember his name, but he was in a band that graduated my freshman year. But he had a sticker on his guitar case. It was the first time I'd ever seen it that said, "Your favorite band sucks." which I always thought was sort of funny, but, you know. Mm. Wow.
So, I thought you were going in a completely different direction with that. I'm not sure why I thought you were going there, but I thought you were going to talk about our good friend Ed
at that Ed moment. Rue. Am I allowed to use his name?
Why not? Ed was one of those people who found me, just as a preface, he found me on MySpace a few years ago, and it seemed like he was doing okay, and now continue, sorry.
Oh my god. Wow. Ed Rue was he in your year?
No, Ed was, he might have been between our years. Okay. He might have been a junior when I was a senior.
All right, so... Ed was, wow. Okay, well, let's lay it out. It was 1993, I think, that I met Ed.
Mm-hmm.
Tattered cardigan, pink hair. I think maybe he had a Vaseline's t-shirt. But then he started making his own t-shirts by drawing on them. Guess who Ed was obsessed with? And Ed had a band called Crumb.
That's right.
Which was Ed in his garage doing something that sounded sort of like putting forks in a blender. But he made a tape. And for those of us in... Jesus. For those of us at the time in a little band called Social Growling, not my title... that was really cool. And I remember actually the day that we all discovered Kurt Cobain had overdosed in Rome, being initially very, very upset that Kurt might die, and then very concerned about Ed.
Yes.
I must have called someone. I wanted someone to call and check on Ed. He was pretty obsessed in a way that you just don't see anymore. Mm-hmm. People now, I guess, express their musical obsession by making mashups. I think is the way it's done. But yeah,
we should come back to mashups in a second.
I was old school obsessed with Mr. Cobain, and I just kind of assumed that Ed stopped breathing the day that Kurt died. But that's good to know.
A similar thing. I wondered years later, like, was Ed okay? And the last time I heard from him, he was. And I think he was playing in a band, not just him and his guitar in the garage, but actually playing in a band. And I actually went over to Ed's house and was I don't know if we were friends, but we were pretty close acquaintances for a little while.
Okay.
And one of the things I thought was remarkable about Ed was that he had... in his room, every demo tape that anybody in our high school put out. Like,
oh, no.
these things that I had been dying to hear, that I never had money to hear. There was a band by three guys in my year, Orpheus, that then became Lift.
Orpheus, that was the band. That was the band that had the guy with the wood glue in his hair.
Okay.
They also did a really amazing, not that same guy, but the other guitar player did a really great version of Pink Floyd's Fearless at the first ever talent show I ever went to. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, no, so, he had the Lift demo tape or the Orpheus demo, whatever they put it out under, and a bunch of other ones, and I was just like, I never got to listen to them there in his, at his house, But yeah, I went over there a few times, and I was really intrigued by Ed, too, because regardless of, I mean, now it's probably really easy to throw up a few songs on a MySpace page or whatever, but when you had to put out a tape, there was something a little bit, regardless of whether it was any good, everyone, I think, had to give Ed some props, because Ed actually did it. You know, he did what we all sort of imagined doing, and then to go into his room and like see that sort of stack of demo tapes, I was like, wow, he really like is into this. And I wouldn't be surprised if Ed was, I mean, I think he's probably still is in a band now. I wouldn't be surprised if he's, I don't know that he'd be really successful, but maybe he's out playing somewhere, you know?
Well, there are a lot of people, you know, and, you know, yeah, I mean, I totally get what you're saying about You had to work to put out a tape once upon a time. It's like, you know, it's the same thing as, you know, back in the day when you would meet that one guy who suddenly was just an encyclopedia of music you had never heard, you know, and he knew hundreds and hundreds of bands. You know, for me, it was Mike at camp, Mike Fournier, who, you know, has become a very successful music writer and put out a book in the 33 and the Third series and, you know, writes for a lot of popular magazines and popular underground magazines, as it were.
Right.
Does his radio show. Who knew everything, you know? You mm-hmm. would mention a band and he would suddenly know everything about that band, even if they were, you know, three people in a van from Santa Monica that you had never heard of.
Right.
And, you know, you had to work at that because, I mean, for us, back in the dark ages, you couldn't just load up any number of social networking applications and say, okay, I want bands that sound like REM today. And suddenly mm-hmm. 60 bands would arrive.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it was very impressive for Ed to do that. And, you know, thinking about it, it's funny how a lot of people from our high school, and I bet this is true for a lot of people, have suddenly become not successful, but at least career musicians that we would have never expected to be career musicians. Like, we'll just say Kyle and not add a surname. But
yeah.
And Kyle was a guy who used to hang around at our band practice sometimes.
I think Kyle has a writing credit on one of our very first songs.
He does, and I'm fairly certain he was only there because, like most people, he assumed he had a shot with my girlfriend. So I'm pretty sure. I think that's the only reason he was there. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, if you look him up. He plays gigs and he knows lots of musicians and and there we are. So moral of the story, kids, is don't put any obvious effort into things and be a creep and stuff like that. is really what that says.
I think that's what it says. Not to completely take us off of this, but you brought up MASH tapes at one point. I actually have been listening to a bunch of mashups. Did you say mash tapes or mashups?
Mashups, I believe. The young people
mashups.
Say.
Yes. I've been listening to a whole slew of them this week after somebody I met at Media Makers last month pointed me to a website that had a bunch of good ones. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what's your feeling about mashups, just in general.
Well, I don't think it's an inherently, unpleasant thing. I think it's one of those things. It's really hard to do well, I think everybody and their cat listened to the Gray Tape. I did,
right?
Sure. So you know, and that was very enjoyable. I've been friended by the Cassettes Won't Listen guy, and I've been checking out some of that stuff. I gotta say, the whole Kanye Radiohead thing, not really working for me.
I don't think I've heard that one.
Yeah, it's just not my thing. I know he makes them himself, and that's, you know, an homage. Although apparently he's angry with Radiohead now because, I don't know. Who cares? So, it's an interesting thing. It's what interests me is that it's the long-form version of sampling. You know, when you think about it. I think that's kind of, I mean, there's always been something goofy like that in our culture, right? Like, everybody knows the thing about the Wizard of Oz, you know?
Yeah.
Wait till the second lions roar, man, and then start Dark Side of the Moon, and it totally syncs up if you're on acid. what you always lose in the transmission of that is, you know, everybody hears the, oh, it syncs up. Oh, that's really funny. And then if you're on acid, kind of gets lost because everything probably syncs up if you're on acid.
Yes, this is true.
No, but I'm assuming. And I mean, it's, you know, the mashup thing, it's interesting because it's an impulse that I've had myself. There was kind of a goofy tradition at some of our New Year's parties, which you may recall way back in the day, where we would put on old Christmas cartoons and turn the sound down.
I do remember that.
Random bits of music to see what matched up. And my favorite one of all time, and you can try this at home, kids, is there was a Smurfs Christmas special. And if you can, I'm sure it's on YouTube because everything's on YouTube.
Right.
At least for like an hour before, you know, some parent company sends a cease and desist notice. But
this
find
is true.
It in that hour and take REM's Everybody Hurts. And if for no other reason,
I do remember this.
It starts very pastoral and there's snow falling and the song is kind of languid. And just as it gets to the first kind of end verse moment, Gargamel and Azrael are standing in a field full of snow and Gargamel is looking down at the ground. And Gargamel will pick up his head and open his mouth at the very same moment that the first sometimes comes through. And it's a thing of beauty. After that, it's all kind of a wash. But that was always the way when you take other people's art and jam it together. So
I remember that. I was going to say something more about mashups, but that it brings me to this other thing that is probably more interesting than talking about mashups. I really like words on mashups.
We're totally alone. You can talk about whatever you want.
I really like a couple of the songs on Dean Gray's American Edit, the sort of Green Day mashup. There's a great one of What's Her Name, the Green Day song, spliced with Manic Monday by the, and it really fits, except for the one part where he decides to just let Manic Monday be dominant in the mix. And, like, that's the only part where I'm kind of like, well, why did it doesn't make sense. There's a great Basement Jaxx versus REM one that I listen to a lot.
I think I have heard that, actually.
Yeah, and just recently, I've been hearing a bunch of ones that I can't really play in the house because they are often rap songs with lots of profanity layered over a really cool rock or pop song, but I still just can't listen to it.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's why I have headphones and iPod. I wanted to ask you another question about those parties from back in the day. You mentioning Smurfs and Everybody Hurts made me think, for whatever reason, of a Japanese game shows getting played at those. Do you remember that at all? Because I've written about that in a novel, and I wonder how much of it I got right.
I remember that Will with orange hair used to bring these cassettes, video cassettes, that he would find somewhere, which would have Japanese game shows on them. And I never actually sat through one because it was usually, it usually appealed to the sort of people that were at my party and I wasn't quite sure how they got there. I think they also came in a kit with Will. And I should say some of whom I like now and I'm friendly with, but at the time, what I remember, though, is that what would happen is they would watch one of these game shows, and then I would come upstairs to discover that someone had taken, you know, I would find the after effects of them trying to recreate the game show. So I would find, like, a trash bag with, like, a head cut out of it that had been put over someone's head, and there would be, like, Cheese Whiz and pretzels all over the floor, or, you know, like, I seem to remember one time there was some people trying to ice skate in my kitchen with Pam. That was unfortunate. What are you going to do? And at least I can say I had crazy parties like they have in the John Hughes movies. Because
that's true.
It certainly has never happened since. I used to be a theater geek, and, you know, cast parties can be kind of crazy, but they're never the right kind of crazy. You know,
No, they're not.
This was absolute, you know, chaos in my house without the benefit of any alcohol whatsoever, which is impressive. That's right, listener at home. We were never like the cool bad children who had like access to a liquor cabinet. We were just the cool lame children. So
that's true.
That makes us normal children, I think, when you factor both those things in. But alas,
and alack.
And alack, which we learned last week.
We're not doing the dictionary thing again this week. We've decided that some segments are better left alone, as standoff one alone, one-off things. But yeah,
I mean, unless, you know, listener, you need help with your homework, in which case we'll totally look stuff up for you.
Right, right, and maybe give you the right answer if you're lucky.
I mean, if you can believe it, we both actually teach English classes.
We do.
Yeah, it's usually like English as a fifth language. So by that point. You know, people won't notice.
Yeah, that's true. before we were talking about this, before we started the show, we were talking about particularly bad papers that we've encountered, right?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah. Not that we're going to read any, because that's a breach of confidentiality.
Oh, absolutely.
You are?
Yeah. Because they're just one line. See?
Okay.
I'll give you an idea, you know, and if the podcast wasn't enough of an idea, I'll give you an idea of just how well I'm getting through to my students. Some quotes from various papers that have been handed in. I keep a file. I'm sure everyone keeps a file of these who teaches because they're just too precious.
That's true.
Let's see. Sir Gawain was noble, stupid at times, but noble. Let's see. It shows you the ups and downs of selling your soul to the devil. I think that one was maybe in relation to Faustus. Grendel is an evil demon, and his mother is no small matter either. Let's see. Wiltho has the hots for Beowulf. All right. Grendel is the son of Hrothgar and a succubus. You know, clearly a well-honed understanding of Beowulf at work.
It would be better now that movie has come out if they Grendel is the child of blah 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 and Angelina Jolie.
I know. I'm waiting for it. You know, I actually read
it's coming.
The film just so I could know what my students were saying.
Right.
You know what they were watching and how to find it because, good lord. You know, and the movie, it's just creepy. You know, like, it's creepy in the way the Polar Express is creepy. The Uncanny Valley thing, it's just, it's true. And
I don't understand that, like, animation technique. I just, I don't see the point of it. That and rotoscoping both kind of creep me out a little bit.
I'm sure it's all secretly funded by George Lucas, you know?
Everything that sucks in Hollywood is secretly funded by George Lucas,
isn't
it?
You know, I think...
Have you ever heard the Patton Oswalt bit where he talks about, you know, if I invented a time machine, I was trying to think of where I would go back in time, and where I'd go back in time is the mid-90s, so I could shoot George Lucas in the head before he made the prequels.
It's kind of true. I mean, all right, we got a good Weird Al song out of it, but...
That's true.
Did we get anything else out of the Star Wars prequels? Anything?
I don't know. I'm dissing on them now, but I actually do like... certain bits of each of them.
This podcast is over. Forever.
Oh, how did I know that was going to be what ended our podcasting career?
Good lord. Look, like every other poor sap, I waited and waited and waited for the Phantom Menace to happen. Now, what I really wanted was 7, 8, and 9 was what I really wanted. But... what I got
don't
was,
give him any ideas.
Well, I don't want it anymore. Unless they use the Timothy Zahn trilogy of books as their basis, because those are awesome. But
right.
But what I really wanted was 7, 8, 9, and what I got was 1, 2, and 3. And you know, the first one, I bought my movie tickets, you know, like everyone else, about 2 months in advance.
Right.
I waited in a huge line, and then I waited in a huge line to get into the cinema, to get the right seats. I was totally psyched. And after, you know, a couple hours of video game demo, I felt my childhood start to die.
Yeah.
But I was willing to give it a chance. I was willing to go back for the second one like a stupid, stupid man. I went to a midnight screening of Attack of the Clones, and... okay, yeah, it was funny to see a CGI Yoda fighting. That was cool. But you know when that movie died for me? And thus
when?
I lost all interest in the trilogy? It died right about the time that young Anakin has returned from killing the Sand People and proclaims, "I slaughtered them! I slaughtered them all!"
But we had to know that Luke's whining was genetic, right? So we had to know that
come on. You're Darth Vader? Really?
Really?
Wow. You know, and the third one, I will say, is the best of the three.
Which for most people isn't saying much.
But two things about the third one, and I will never get over them. Well, actually, what really, side point, we'll leave that. Two things. One, the little droid at the end, it's like her heart just gave up. That's how you're going to emotionally convey the death of, okay. And Frank right. Invader. You know, really, because we're supposed to see him as this incredible force for evil, the ultimate right. evil in the middle trilogy. And what we get in the third movie is him being Frankenstein, kind of stiffly yeah. lurching off of a thing. Of, oh. I mean, come on, really? Really?
I wonder.
Sheet over his head, for God's sake. So... yeah, that it just killed it for me. And what really kills me is that these stupid prequels have now infected the main trilogy. Because, you know, of course, at the end of Jedi now, there are different ghosts and there are different... it's just no. Just no.
I wonder whether it's just impossible for any of us who grew up with the originals first and then saw these second to ever really... I like bits of the prequels, and I know that means that we're never going to get to podcast again.
It just means that we're not friends.
But I wonder whether we can ever actually appreciate what's supposed to go on. Like, and this comes to this question of like, if I'm going to show my daughter Kaylee the movies at some point, am I going to show her them in sequential order, or am I going to show them to her? In the order they were released, or am I just going to show her the original trilogy and never show her the prequels?
You are going to break her spirit the way ours were broken. You're going to show her the original trilogy, and then you're going to show her the special edition regular trilogy, and then you're going to show her the next special edition regular trilogy, and then, when she's kind of bored, you're going to hit her with the prequels and leave her jaded and disappointed. That's the way... our parents raised us, and it's turned out fine.
I guess that settles that argument.
You know, I didn't even watch any of the cartoon Clone Wars stuff.
I did not either.
The animation, it looked like... do you remember that period, like around 1998, when all the Marvel comics were drawn in a very angular... very imprecise fashion? Maybe it's about 1999, 1998.
You know, yep, no, I don't know what you're talking about.
Sort of around the 2099 series started coming out, and everything just got really sloppy and terrible. You know, it was kind of like that. And, you know, and I'm watching the previews and thinking, why do I want to watch this? It's terrible looking.
Yeah. And I also heard that it was basically just acting as a pilot for the ongoing... The movie release was just basically a pilot for the TV series.
That's what I heard. Which, you know, okay, I'm an idiot. And, you know, George Lucas is forever going to be, you know, that bad significant other that you can't get rid of. You know, you just... you keep giving them one more chance. God knows I'm that person for everyone else. That's how I want this podcast to be, I think. But no, I mean, I'll watch it because, you know, because it's been promised to us that other people will be writing these stories. And some of them are people who have written some of the novels. And I think, well, some of the novels are pretty good. So maybe George Lucas won't kill it. Maybe it'll be good. Maybe this time George Lucas will stay.
Do you think, now we're getting close to our 1 hour point where we turn back into a pumpkin or something, but do you think there's enough redeemable in the prequel trilogy that somewhere down the line when George is dead, that whoever gets the rights to it could recut those things, and no, you don't think there's...
I don't think you can get past Hayden Christensen. I don't think it can be done. And I think there's too much that relies on CGI performance. You know, there are too many animated characters performing crucial roles. And you have too many actors standing around responding to nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, when they film those movies, most of the time they would shoot a scene, you know, so I understand, where people wouldn't be told the context. You'd have two guys in a ship and it would be all green, and they would hand them just their dialogue and say, mm-hmm. okay, we'll just do this a bunch of different ways. Now, that's a great acting exercise. You know, how many different ways can you say, you shot my cat?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really the kind of thing that, you know, leads us to Gandhi or Lawrence of Arabia or, you know, any other time-tested film. It's, you know, we get... You know what it is? I think what George Lucas really wanted, I think what he really hoped was that we would hate this so much that we would beg him for more Muppets. I think he was still bitter from Return of the Jedi and decided that he would make us beg for those Muppets.
So here's another question. So we look down on the prequel trilogy. We go back to the originals. Of the originals, we're all only really in agreement about Empire, aren't we? And does it come down to the fact, was there only really one good Star Wars movie out of all six?
I like A New Hope.
I like A New Hope too, but
it's a fine, fun film. You know, tell you the truth, and I don't know if this reduces my geek quotient. I actually get kind of sleepy during the middle of Empire. I don't know if that's muscle memory from when I was like 5 years old, but right about the time that Luke is just kind of faffing around in Dagobah, and
no, I can see that. Yeah,
you know, as soon as they enter the cloud city of Bespin, all I can think about is sleeping on one of those clouds. You know, it picks up at the end, but I got to tell you, I mean, you start off with this great battle on Hoth, and and then we're just kind of wandering around. I get a little sleepy.
If I think about the middles of each movie, that might be where they all sort of struggle, because we do start off generally with each one of them with this sort of big battle of some sort that really kind of gets us into it, and then the middle is kind of sucky here and there. That second act, and then the third act is generally picks it back up.
I think where the prequels really fall down is they don't encourage us to have emotional investment in any of the characters. I mean, there's a big war with Gungans. Who gives a damn? They're Gungans. Yeah. Who cares? Shoot as many as you want. In fact, I bought the Battlefront game just so I could shoot Gungans. That's true.
Gungans and battle droids. I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, what's at stake in that battle?
You know, nothing. Nothing. It's just a big battle. And you know, and it's like that over and over again. There's no menace to anything. And I mean, look at the impulse, you know, at work. I mean, you have Boba Fett, who, when we meet him in the original trilogy, is this mysterious, you know, obviously intimidating, clearly powerful figure we're supposed to fear. You know, he's got kind of a cult following. And in the prequels, they reveal, oh, Boba Fett's just another dude. You know, he's just like all the other stormtroopers. He just wears different armor and has a slightly different agenda.
Right.
Well, great. You know, I mean, thanks for ruining that. Why don't you now tell us that Porkins was just an average guy, and, you know, Wedge isn't all that special either. It's just not right. It's just not fair.
Porkins was just an average guy that ate a few too many something or other.
I kind of assumed that was like an honorific, you know, that he got that title for doing something great involving pork. And I was happy with that mythology. But then in the original... In the first of the new trilogy, you have a fat dude blow up when they're assaulting the big thing in space, and it's just like, you don't care about Porkins.
No.
He was just a slow-moving starfighter pilot. Whatever. And here we are. So what's coming up on your site this week?
What's coming up? Well, for the only thing I'm sure about is that we're going to talk about Watchmen, because the movie's coming out at the end of the week. Other than that, I have no idea. And I have a bunch of papers to grade, so it will probably be close to midnight before I make up my mind.
I hear that.
We may talk about Lost. That might be on there.
Oh, my God, Lost.
I know, we didn't get into that.
We warned them.
We did. We said, we will talk about it.
All bets are off this week.
Because I think after this episode, there might be like a week-long break or something.
It hurts.
Yeah, so we might talk about that, and I'm still making up my mind and everything else. How about you, before we talk about Lost?
What are we doing this week? We are trying our best to look like we're a viable moving website when, in fact, we're lazy and boring. I get a couple other posts thinking about trying to encourage a couple of people to move it along a little bit with their submissions. I am contemplating the release of a slightly different audio portion of the website. It's an idea I've been kicking around. I'm not really sure. I thought it might be interesting to see if reading any of the entries kind of made a different dimension, and if that actually was sort of interesting to anyone, then I might include them. You know, for the people that come to my site and for some reason are, you know, uninterested in reading, they could hear me droning on in their iPod, and I'm sure that would be far more entertaining.
No, you know what? It's a good idea, because I think there are people out there who like to have something on while they're working.
Maybe.
So
poking around at that, and considering whether or not a return to One Imaginary Blog is in the cards. Mm. So.
And One Imaginary Blog is your Cure.
My Cure song by song blog.
Yeah.
So we'll see. So yeah, it's kind of a week of, yeah, if I feel like it.
That's always a good week. Okay, Lost, right?
Lost. Oh my God.
And we'll finish on that, because how are you going to top talking about Lost?
That's right. So if you haven't watched the episode, first of all, we told you not to listen to this episode unless you had been caught up. So right. You know what? This is your fault. Either turn it off or just deal with it.
Okay.
Oh my
That's
God.
It. Oh my God. So what was the most shocking moment for you?
What was really, what amazed me was, one, that Ben was so convincing and so tender when he got Locke to come down off the little table. And I thought, yep. Oh my God, they really are going to try to make Ben a good guy.
Uh-huh.
And then seconds later, of course, he's strangling him with his bare hands. And I thought, wow.
What I loved
was
about
dark.
It was, he was waiting to get the one bit of information that he needed. And that's why he's so desperate. That's why he's so tender, right?
Oh, so awesome.
He's like, I cannot let this guy kill himself before I get what I need out of him. The episode is great, and I loved it. But that scene and the timing of the whole thing bring me to one. I don't want to criticize it, but I want to see what your thought is on this. The timeline kind of gets funny because of how that happened. Because, at least to my mind, because in the previous scene, he's talking to Jack, and he's trying to convince Jack about everything, and Jack doesn't have the full beard, right? Mm-hmm. And then we get that scene, and that's when Ben kills him. And what I'm trying to figure out is, does Locke's body sit in that room for a while before it's discovered, or was there more of a time gap between when he talks to Jack and when Ben comes in and
I think it could go either way. I'm not sure it changes much. I mean,
no, I mean, I think it's just, I know that Stephanie is addicted, my wife is addicted to it too, and she had a momentary, like a moment of, that's weird, and I just wonder whether other people are going to have that.
Yeah.
at that moment, too.
You know what I was wondering, and this, I'm sure somebody somewhere has already said this. Hurley's got that guitar. Is that Charvis' guitar?
Somebody somewhere, I think, was referring to it as if it were Charlie's guitar. How would he have gotten it? I don't know, but well, Hurley is rich, so... Charlie's... I mean,
Hurley's on the island after Charlie dies, and his guitar is still on the island. So, I mean, maybe Hurley just took it with him when he left, you know?
But I don't... I mean, he would have had to have had that in the helicopter and then brought it onto the...
Yeah.
Onto the boat. I think it's definitely Charlie's guitar. I think it might be a guitar that he bought from, like, an auction, you know, that's held because Charlie's dead as far as the world's concerned. Because I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at the...
But I love the symmetry, starting with the new plane crash, you know, and discovering that Locke wasn't on the manifest. And it was a nice callback to Ethan, which was very exciting.
It's, that whole part was... And I am a little worried about... I feel like I'm doing all the negative stuff, and I really love the episode. I'm a little worried about those two new characters becoming... Sort of Nikki and Paolo version.
That'll be fine.
But I think they'll be fine. They seem to be more integrated with what's going on. And like, they might be playing a more major role. Like, that's a couple of introductions that have happened in the last couple of weeks have me thinking these people are going to be more important, because I don't feel like they're introducing people just for the sake of introducing people anymore. I felt that about Jack's grandfather. Like, there's something more to, maybe not to that actor, but to that character, because we're doing all this time travel. And I definitely feel like these guys might be playing a bigger role. The fact that they've got those boats, and there was that whole thing earlier with the outriggers shooting at Sawyer and company.
True.
It's obvious that they landed, there's at least two different times going on, I think. I think at least half of the people landed in one time and half of the people landed in a different time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, Jin is driving a mint-condition Dharma van and wearing a mint-condition Dharma jumpsuit. They must have gone back in time.
Yeah.
My theory, actually, about the outriggers and the flaming arrows, I think that... The people that shot those things at our losties were from the Black Rock. I think those are the slaves that ended up on the island, defending the island against maybe what they think are other slavers.
Oh, well, I definitely think that's probably a very good theory, especially about the flaming arrows. Mm. I'm thinking when they found those outriggers, they had Ajira Airlines bottles of water in them, and that's why I was thinking there was a connection there. And of course now we know that the pilot and a woman took one of the outriggers, and I'm wondering, is that Sun? Because we don't know where Sun is just yet. I'm really curious about what's going on, where people are, and especially about what this forthcoming episode is going to do. Seems like from the one preview that they played right afterwards, it might have more of a Sawyer focus, which would be cool. It'd be interesting to see what happens with him, how they all ended up in, well, I don't know if they all ended up in jumpsuits, but how Jin ended up in a jumpsuit.
That's pretty exciting.
That's very exciting. Oh, if you're not watching that show, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Yeah, if you're not watching the show and you're still listening to this, go outside. go outside, read a book, listen to music, kiss a girl, do something, anything. Just live your life, please.
Please.
We're begging you. Stop listening to this podcast. And I think with that, we should just let people stop listening.
I think so. We will catch you next time. I'm E. Christopher Clark from GeekVerse5.com saying sayonara.
See you later.
Bye. I just wanna